tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
sounds fine. Radio sounds fine. KC2WGB.
KC2WGB, KH1BR. Thank you very much, sir. Located up in the Bronx by Riverdale. Just wanted to make sure I can get in tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, should have no problem. Sounds good. KC2WGB clear.
KC2WGB, K6GB, do you copy?
Good evening, Al. Yes, a little bit of noise in the background, but to copy you, it's clear enough to copy.
Okay, John. I just got about 15 minutes ago from another location, and maybe just didn't get me. I was downstairs, and I heard you on, and didn't come back, so I figured I'd come up here where it sits in the net.
How are things going with the house, Al? Everything working out for you out there?
Well, I moved over all the test equipment operation, the avionics operation. Now we're just finishing up the place, so we'll move over the QTH and leave everything else here.
Ah, very good. Well, sounds like you're on schedule. All right. Be listening to you tonight. Enjoy. KC2WGB clear.
Okay, John. K6DPC clear.
Al, and to you.
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
All right. By the way, I've been coughing here, so if you see Willie, I hope he's coming. Tell him I hope he comes by noon, because if he tells me that he's not coming tomorrow, I gotta forget about it.
Yeah, his plan is to see you at noon. He's leaving my facility, so he's planning to see you at noon, unless he says he's coming. So, you know, I don't worry about that. I saw him today, and he confirmed it. He's leaving my operation to go over and see you.
Okay, that'll be very good, Al. Yeah, I'll expect him at about 12. All right, well, come out in that time. I'll see you later. Thank you, K6DPC, and 2EO.
Okay, Richard. K6DPC, clear.
Good evening, you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. At this time, we begin the TechNet. Dick, John, Paul, and Hal run this thing called the TechNet, and it gathers curious ham radio operators or curious people interested in electronics, wireless electronics in particular. They discuss their usually favorite subject, teach each other how it all works. We have to teach each other how it all works because, from my point of view, the schools do a slightly less than mediocre job of teaching wireless electronics. They got a long way to go. They do a good job of teaching computer science and engineering science, but when it comes to wireless, wow. To some degree, I think they're in the dark ages, and they're not responding to the difference between what's required and what they're teaching. There's no feedback that's working. That's an opinion. So the state of affairs right now is such that if you want a good wireless engineer, you have to hire a ham radio operator, a guy who's been tinkering with it, building antennas in the backyard and finding out what works and what doesn't work, and experimenting with transmission lines and transmitters and receivers and propagation. All of that knowledge comes from ham radio operators. Let me drop. So the curious people, they sometimes use an awful lot of divergent analysis. In other words, you think their mind is wandering because they ask strange questions that are only mildly related. Well, in many cases, they're just attacking a problem of lack of knowledge by going at it from a different angle. A guy who's asking the question about how do those electrons flow on a wire might really be asking how does that antenna work, because those electrons, energy has to bounce back and forth on that antenna a whole lot of times before it finally gets radiated. That's some of the stuff we discuss here. The TechNet started in the New York City area way back in 1982. This particular repeater covers northern New Jersey, southern New York State, western Connecticut, and a good section of Long Island. By way of its eastern and western input, it covers almost all of Long Island. So in that New York City metropolitan area, we think there's say, hey, I've got some experience on that one. Now, this is what I've learned. And here's the benefit of my knowledge in that particular area. So it's a contributory type thing, the TechNet. One of the things we might get into tonight is the topic of Q, the Q of a resonant circuit. If you're an antenna designer, if you're a radio designer, if you're a designer of filters, the Q of your filters is something very important. And so later on, we're going to get into a discussion of that. Not at first. Let me drop. We have a loose schedule because these people are free thinkers. We don't have a highly regimented, highly structured method of running this TechNet. The loose schedule is that for the first hour, we take questions and answers, quite questions, and try to give answers that are not too extensive. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, our space expert, who gives a space report. I should have said that before that. John, KCJWGB, gives us the mailbag. There's a good number of guys out there who found us by their scanner, don't have their HEM license yet, in the process of building the hardware and studying the license material. And they ask questions by way of snail mail and email and pigeon droppings. They give those questions to John, and he selects a few of those. There are times when John gets as many as 275 emails with questions in 1 week. Is there a thirst for knowledge out there? Oh, you bet there is, for a darn good reason. As I said, the schools are not getting enough information. The books do a mediocre job. The schools do a less than mediocre job. So we try to correct that. Along the way, Hal K6 DPZ gives us his viewpoint on briefer ways of explaining things, because he's been in the radio for a zillion years. And he's you go to a website that he runs, and you take a look at the pictures of the chunks of electronics that are under his command, and you say, wow, I'd like to have 1% of that stuff. Okay, well, we're going to take questions and answers in a minute. And the way you're going to be checking in with us is you're going to give us your call letters, your name, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 32 years, this is TechNet number 1525, after 32 years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven to us anymore. So give me your...
Repeater, timeout.
And there's something you're not supposed to do. No, thank goodness I didn't time out the Easter machine. You're supposed to, after a minute and a half, you're supposed to make sure you give a drop to make sure you don't time out the machine. Also, when I finally do come around and call your call letters, it's very easy to say, hey, I'm excited and I want to get in there in a hurry. Try to remember to wait for the four beeps between the last guy that dropped the repeater and when you pick up. Otherwise, you might time out the machine. A typical sign that might sound like this, VE3LNZ, Roy, and no, that's not his name, but you know what I mean, and yes. So give me your call letters and name right now, K2LAW listening.
Kilowatt 2, Mike, Victor Radio, Joe,
yes.
Kilowatt Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec United Mobile, and yes, name is John.
Those guys are doing it just right. We got Joe and John. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now. Okay, one last call. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Because you do have a question or a comment. Please give me your call letters and name right now.
WS2N4 with this week's space report. Dick, John, Al, everybody else.
Very fine, Paul. So, one last call. Anyone with a question or a comment for the net, give me your call letters right now and name. Okay, maybe we're going to have a small number of check-ins tonight. And so maybe Joe and John are going to get the lucky opportunity of we can discuss their problem as long as they like, because there's no hurry. Go right ahead, Joe. K2 Mike, Victor, Romeo, K2 LAW. My name is Dick. You got it, Joe.
Thank you, Dick. K2 LAW, K2 MBR, Joe. My question is on the length of a half wave antenna in feet. I'm looking at the ARRL handbook, and it says the formula is length in feet, 492 times K, which is a half like that. I just want to know where the 492 comes from. It's probably right in front of me. It probably has to do with speed of light, but 492, where does that come from? Thank you.
And that number comes from a zillion years of tradition in the ham radio world, Joe. Where did the number really... You're asking where did the number really come from? Speed of light is 300 million meters per second. You take the speed of light, 300 million meters per second. You divide it by your frequency of interest in hertz. If you were trying to figure out what antenna length you'd have at 3.5 megacycles, you'd take 3,500 cycles, 3,500 hertz, divide it into that 300 million, and you'd come up with 80 meters. 80 meters is the full wavelength for a whole bunch of reasons. The dipole has to be electronically a half wavelength long. So you're going to make the wire approximately 40 meters long with a slight correction factor, because you're going to have a loop of wire at the end of the dipole on the left and right side where you put the egg insulator. That loop of wire gives you a little bit of extra capacitance. So therefore, you want to shorten the wire a little bit. So there's another couple of percent change in the number. You put that all together. Frequency divided into wavelength, divided by 2 to make it half wave. Subtract a couple of percent because of capacitance effects on the end. Convert the meters into feet, and you get that number, 492. And it works extremely well. You cut your piece of wire for that length by that formula. You make your dipole in the usual manner, suspended at a reasonable distance. Suspended at a reasonable distance up in the air. Connect your feed line to it, probably with a ballon if you want to do it the pure way, but it's not a mandatory thing. And then in the shack, you take your antenna analyzer, your standing wave ratio bridge, or your vector network analyzer, any kind of instrumentation by which you sweep the frequency and you measure how well the antenna is performing, and you find out that very close to that 492 number is where the antenna resonates, gives you the lowest standing wave ratio. Almost every antenna, if you sweep the frequency, in other words, you set the dial in your rig at 3.5, then 3.6, then 3.7, and 3.8, and each one of those places you measure the standing wave ratio. 1:1 is the best you can get, and you might hit 2:1 or 3:1 at certain frequencies, but you make a plot where the horizontal dimension is frequency and the vertical dimension is the standing wave ratio that you measure, and you connect the dots, and you will usually get a bathtub shaped curve, a U-shaped curve, and the bottom of that curve is where the antenna is resonating, and the left hand side and the right hand side of the curve where it's rising is where you're going off resonance, and the antenna is starting to give you a lot of inductive reactance when you go high in frequency, or it gives you a lot of capacitor reactance when you go low in frequency. So you can make that plot, you can figure out how well your antenna resonates, you can find out whether or not that 492 is the right number for you and your method of construction. So it's a very handy number. As I said, it's got a lot of tradition, works extremely well most of the time. There's a couple of catches. But let me pass it back to you so far and see if that made sense before I give you some of the other crazy information on this one, Joe. Good question. K2MVR. The microwave voice of Kingsbridge. No, in Bronx. You live in... You're one of those guys, Joe. We can have a little bit of fun with you. You live in the Bronx. Back to you, Joe. K2LIW.
Yes, sir. Thank you. No, you definitely cleared it up. Because I've always wondered, 46... Usually you use 468 over frequency and megahertz. But where that number came from was what my doubt there. But you've cleared it up. I just got to take out my calculator, do a couple of exercises to get that number. Still a little confused where it comes from, because you did say it's speed of light, it's meters per second divided over frequency in hertz, and this would be 492
divided by the frequency in megahertz, so somewhere in there, I think that's where that translation comes. But I understood. I understood the gist of it. Thank you. Thank you so much. Back to you.
Now, I may have very well made a mistake. Maybe the number is 468, maybe it's 492. As you can tell, I don't use that number, Joe. I go one step closer to the foundation of the building, so to speak. Whenever I'm building an antenna, I want to know wavelengths. I plug in 3 exponential 10, that's the speed of light, in centimeters per second. 3 exponential 8 is in meters per second. I plug in 3 exponential 10 centimeters per second. Divide by hertz, I get an answer in centimeters, and then the centimeters I divide by 2.54 to convert it to inches, because most of the antennas I build as an occupation are at frequencies like 915 megacycles, antennas for the license-free band, for radio frequency identification, handheld devices, and so on. So as you can tell, I go at it from a slightly different manner. But as you go higher in frequency, the wavelength gets shorter. Wavelength is a frequency in hertz divided into the speed of light. So as you go higher in frequency, the wavelength gets shorter. And therefore, the antenna you're going to build is going to be smaller. And that's just the way things work. It's kind of hard to believe that the length of the wire of the antenna would lead you to believe that, okay, that's a half wave. And so that wave traveling in space is that big. Good way of understanding it. And boy, we've all made that mistake. That's not it at all. If you could see that antenna coming out of that transmitter, the signal coming out of the antenna, each individual wavefront, the surface of it would be a surface of a sphere, and that sphere is expanding away from the antenna in all directions, up, down, left, right, forward, and back. That sphere, perfectly round sphere, is the front phase of that first cycle, so to speak, spreading out into space. The next cycle is at this...
Repeater, time out.
The next cycle is the next sphere inside of the first sphere, which is a little smaller in diameter, but they're both expanding at the speed of light, and the real wavelength is the difference between those spheres, the difference in radius. That's the real wavelength. So that signal's going out everywhere. Because the way your antenna works, the energy in your antenna has to bounce back and forth, and you want the antenna to have a certain length so that all those bounces stay in step with each other, stay co-phase. That's the reason why you make the antenna half wavelength long electronically. But that wave's traveling in space is not in the dimension of your antenna, in the direction of your antenna. The wave is at right angles to it, these bubbles. The article will make you it a little bit more clear if you go to Mike number 2's website. There's Mike number 1, which is amateurradio.tangovictor, where you can look at, you can play back all the past recordings for the last 7 years, a few thousand hours worth of them, of the TechNets. Or Mike number 2 is the website of Limarch, TechNet.com, and in the upper left-hand corner of that first page, you'll see a marking about the so-called bubble diagram, in other words, the bubble explanation of how a radio wave spreads and how an antenna works. And you read that article a few times, it'll make it a little bit more clear. Let me drop.
DGC with a comment.
Hal recognized. The first time you hear all of this jazz, Joe, it doesn't make sense. It's opposite of common sense. How that radio wave really looks, what's the spacing between the individual cycles in free space, how you set up the antenna, all of this doesn't make sense. So if you're a little bit confused at first, you're in very good company. But there's a man that's going to clear it all up for us. Hal, K60PZ, K2RW, go ahead, Hal.
K2RW, K60PZ. I was just thinking, the formula 492, something in my mind tells me that you're calculating a folded dipole, Dick. I just wanted to pass that on.
Yeah, the exact number, you can tell I don't use that home inner. I go back to the basics, and you use the 3 exponential 10 centimeters per second speed of light, divide by frequency in hertz, and then take, in many cases, if it's a dipole-like structure, I take a 95% of that, because the end capacitive effects, and because many of the antennas that I build professionally are extremely wide pieces of sheet metal in order to get great bandwidth, low Q, and you'll be hearing about that a little bit later. I have to add another correction factor. So each of these formulas, Joe, is a method of getting you into the ballpark. No formula on any antenna is going to give you an exact answer. You're always going to use the PCO, post-computer optimization. That means you're going to tweak it. You're going to make that plot of standing wave ratio versus frequency. You're going to see the bottom of the bathtub is at 3.6 megahertz, but you wanted it to be at 3.7 megahertz. By way of the plot, you know where your antenna is right now, and you go out there and shorten it a little bit to move it up in frequency, if you know what I mean. You've always got to do a little bit of tweaking. These formulas get you very close, get you into the ballpark, but most of the time, they don't get you to home plate. You're going to do some tweaking, and we amateurs are extremely good at tweaking. Let me drop one more.
I got a comment when you get a quick one there, Joe. I mean, WY2U.
Hey, there's the man. And he's gonna straighten it out for us. What I was starting to say is that by way of my ham radio experience of tweaking, you take me in front of a Rohde & Schwarz modern vector network analyzer, 2002, and on a bench I'm starting to experiment with 915 mega antennas. And by way of tweaking them and seeing the results in real time, I was able to find a whole class of antennas that have performance that nobody ever knew about. As a ham radio tweaker, I found that. To take all of the available formulas and apply them, to take all of the available computer modeling programs and apply them, I could not, would not, never would have found that whole class of antennas, of which 32 of them have my name on them as a patent application. So we amateurs as tweakers, we can find things that the world doesn't know about. WY2U, K2LAW, tell us how you run into this one, sir.
Hey, Dick, good evening. Mike over here, Rockville Center. Yeah, Joe, I think, said he may still have a little bit of a, maybe not confusion, but a question about where this 492 may come from, so let me try to explain it based on what I'm going to call the fundamental wave equation, which is equal, like you said before, lambda equals c divided by f, c is the speed of light, f is the frequency in hertz. If you wanted to use the frequency in megahertz, just like you said, the numerator is 300, not 300 times 10 to the 8th, the denominator is in megahertz. So the number 300 is important, 300 meters. If you convert that to feet, you multiply meters by 3.281, and you get 984. Well, it just so happens that 984 feet is the amount of distance that light would travel in space in 1 microsecond. When the reciprocal of 1 microsecond happens to be a megahertz. So if you want to think of it in terms of fundamental wavelength, 984 feet is exactly one wavelength in space of 1 megahertz. If you divide that by 2, you get the number 492, which is exactly the half wavelength of 1 megahertz in free space. If you want a half length at any other frequency, simply take 492 and divide it by the frequency in megahertz. I hope that helps you out a little bit. Back to net, WY2U.
Well done, Mike. And by the way, Joe, you're very lucky. Mike is a teacher of physics in college. He's in his natural environment when he's giving this kind of information. You're getting it from the horse's mouth, Joe. You're allowed to ask some additional questions if you want to have more understanding of this. And by the way, the basic method by which a simplest of all antennas works, a dipole antenna, I can ask a couple of puzzle questions to antenna engineers who are in the field for 20 solid years. Sometimes you get a look on their face that I call the deer in the headlights. They don't quite know what's really going on inside. All of radio is a little bit of a mystery, and we curious amateurs are teaching each other a little bit more of the mystery. It's a great research area where nobody will ever know everything about this one, Joe. Just like the guys at the Large Hadron Collider with it. They're looking at the very basic particles of the universe, of nature, of matter. They're learning more and more. They're never going to know it all. Mother Nature designed this universe to be much more complicated than you think. K2MBR, K2LAW, go ahead, Joe.
thank you. WY to you. You too, sir. Definitely cleared it up. And I got 2 pages of notes here. And WY to you's explanation actually turned on that light bulb. I got it. I knew it was a conversion of meters and feet somewhere there. So thank you so much. Thank you so much. I won't tie it up anymore. And yeah, everybody have a great evening. Thank you. K2MBR73.
Yeah, when we get excited and we're talking about our favorite subject, sometimes the words fly by at 120 words a minute, and taking notes is a little bit difficult. Almost all of this jazz, you can play it back again as many times as you like until you get it if you want to, assuming we didn't make any errors, by going to that website, www.amateurradio.tangovictor. That's Mike number one. You go to his website. You choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and the right technet, and you play it back in 1 hour reels, and there's some doggone information. And there's quite a few college professors that will tell their students, if you want to see what radio was really like, go and listen to those recordings. And so, not always 100% accurate, but most of the stuff we think is pretty good. And so there's 7 or 8 years, quite a few thousand hours worth of it all recorded there. And the internet in general is capable of giving you a hell of a lot of information. Boy, there are people who don't like Wikipedia. I do. I think it's got a 98% accuracy, if you know what I mean. Some darn good information that you want to know how nuclear magnetic resonance, as it used to be called, or magnetic resonance imaging, how it works. You Google those words and you look at the explanation by Wikipedia. You'll learn an awful lot about what's going on. Okay, we're going to move on to John. Let me drop for a minute. Hope you're still within range, John. Kilo Delta 2, Foxtrot, Quebec Uniform, Mobile. K2RAW, you got it, John.
Thank you, Dick. K2RAW, this is KD2FQU. My question actually sounds ridiculous compared to what Joe's was, but this is along the lines of Wi-Fi, like 2.4 gigahertz and a dual band set on a router for internet use, of course. I'm having issues with a wireless router that I recently purchased, and just let me let it drop for a moment. And the question is, with internal antenna routers versus external antenna routers, what would probably be the best use for a home application? Square footage of the apartment is about 1,100 square feet.
Yeah, this is an area I've got a lot of opinions on, John. In the early days of cell phones, for instance, there was a little bit of a whip antenna sticking out of the top. In some cases, you were supposed to pull up the whip to get full reception. And the American public didn't like that thing sticking out. They were afraid it's going to hit them in the eye. And the assistant insisted that the antenna all be contained inside. Okay? They've got a more attractive-looking package with the antenna inside. But they've taken a hit they don't know about. Squeeze that antenna inside where it's alongside of all that other electronics, and the poor antenna doesn't get a chance to really breathe out into the real air, the antenna performance is lower. If this is the best of all worlds, it'd be a tiny little connector, a MMCX miniature coaxial connector on the side of your wireless phone, your cell phone. So you could plug in a piece of wire. That piece of wire would go to either an antenna connected to the windshield of the car or to a mag mount on top of the car, and you'd have a hell of a lot more range. An awful lot of the dropouts you get on cell phones wouldn't be there anymore if you're the passenger in a car using a cell phone as you're driving along. Having an external antenna would give you a 10 times more signal, if you know what I mean. In the case of a 802.11 2.4 gigahertz wireless router, any method by which you can give it a better antenna, an antenna that really gets a chance to breathe outside of the package, a coaxial cable that goes to a higher location in your apartment, out the window, on top of the building, you're going to get a hell of a lot more range. And so, as we amateurs continue to study how VHF, UHF antennas work, we keep rediscovering that there's 3 things to make the antenna work well. Altitude, altitude, and altitude. When it comes to ham radio, house-to-house communication, if you know what I mean. Any altitude you give the antenna where it can clear the local buildings and trees gives you a hell of a lot more range. Anything you can do with that wireless router to give it a free external antenna at a higher altitude, free of nearby metallic objects, is going to give you a better coverage, less dropouts as you walk around the property. My son did some experimenting along these lines with his router, and he eventually got to the point with a good antenna where he could walk anywhere around an acre of property with his laptop and talk to the wireless router, if you know what I mean. So you would think, let me drop one of my clients, for instance, was about to add a 2.4 gigahertz antenna to a product, and he had two or three different brand names of antenna he could buy. One of them had a gain rating of 1 dB over isotropic. One was 2.4 dB over isotropic, was the manufacturer's claim. And the one with the 2.4 dB of gain had twice the price of the 1 dB gain antenna. He's asking me, should I buy the more expensive antenna? I said, my goodness, if Mike, I think his name was, yes, his name was Mike. I said, Mike, you've fallen into the trap. First of all, that gain number that's published by the manufacturer, in many cases, is not the result of a laboratory measurement. It's the result of what the advertising department said they should put down for a number or help them sell the antenna. The real performance difference between that 1 dB gain and the 2 dB gain antenna is almost zero. When you look at the real propagating signal path between that antenna and the transmitter that wants to talk to it 50 feet away, and the real path loss between the two is 70 dB, and whether or not you've got 69 dB of loss or 70 dB of loss, it is a wash, if you know what I mean. The real gain of the antenna, if it was different, is minor, and it's a phony, and if you actually went and measured that gain, it's probably not there. So I'm giving you a little bit of a hint about some of the dirty little secrets about the world of advertising antenna gains, particularly television aerials. My goodness, some of those antennas are really big, great big lies. The bottom line of that one, let me drop it, is that you'll notice that there's a zillion antennas being advertised in QST magazine. Not one single one of those advertisements tells you in the ad the gain of the antenna, for a very good reason. About 15 or 20 years ago, American Radio Relay League realized that almost all of the antenna manufacturers were fibbing very strongly, lying through their teeth as to what the gain number was. They were setting a gain number in order to sell an antenna, and that gain number was coming from the advertising department at the measurement laboratory. It became such a great big controversy that QST said, okay, you guys can advertise your antennas, not magazine. It's talking how big, how beautiful it is, how strong it is, and how well it survives the wind and whatever, but you're not going to put a gain number in there because we don't believe you. So, as you can see, we amateurs, we know how to make an antenna work well. Give me the full length of the antenna, give it some nice airspace, give it the right altitude above the terrain, and you're going to get all kinds of range out of it. Now, there's a whole class of fancy antennas that you can squeeze them down in size and still get full performance. But you take a hit there, too. They become more narrow-band in performance. I know I've gone pretty far left of center of some of your questions there, John, but maybe this helps a little bit. KD2FQU, and you can ask more questions. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. K2RIW, KD2FQU. I completely agree, and I do understand with the internal antenna versus the external antenna. So the router I have is set up Falcon multi-beam technology for AC use and so on, and all the frills and so forth. And I've noticed that the connectivity between like my cell phone or a laptop has varied. Cell phone supports 5 gigahertz, and laptop only supports 2.4. Laptop shows that it's connected. Speed does vary, of course, and I understand the issues with the materials in between from where the router is and from where the device and how far away it is. So a second part for my question would be, with the use of the, some routers are with three external antennas using an SMA or probably an end connection, aftermarket antenna, and let me let it drop?
Hey, Joe, John.
Yeah, sorry. The use of the aftermarket antenna, even with claiming higher gain, of course not to really take that, just take it with a grain of salt. Longer and then maybe higher the antenna would be better used inside of a home application.
Very fine, John. Stand by a second. Eric, I can tell you're tapping on the tubes or on the transistors. Quite possibly you're at the site, and maybe you want to tell us that you're about to do an experiment. Eric is the man who makes sure all this hardware keeps working. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, K2EJ. What I wanted to do is, I am up at the site. I've got to reboot the computer system, which means EchoLink is going to go away for a minute or two, so I just want to let the EchoLink pumps know it's going to drop out, wait about a minute, and it should come back. And I don't think it's going to disturb the on-air operation, but I'm not sure. I just may throw it into transmit and stay that way. K2RIW, K2J.
Real good stuff, Eric. We could hear you tapping on something. We could hear the tapping sound coming through the repeater output. Out of curiosity, what were you tapping on? Somewhere near the voltage-controlled oscillator of the phase lock loop of the transmitter? Over to you, Eric.
Now, I'll tell you what, if you want to hear something funny, I'll yell into it. All right, there you go.
Very fine, Eric. I heard you say my call letters by shouting into the voltage-controlled oscillator. The microphonicness of that circuit allowed your voice to come through a little bit low in frequency response. I'm wearing earphones, and I can hear what you say. Great stuff. How did you discover you can, in other words, under emergency conditions, if you're willing to shout loud enough, you can get out of that transmitter even with no microphone? KE2EJ, how the hell did you discover that? K2LIW.
No, I knew. I know the circuit, so it is a bit microphonous. Actually, in the later versions of the repeater, they actually supplied little rubber isolation mounts. But actually, one day I came up here with no HT and no microphone, and I had a conversation just by doing that.
Well done. There's a million ways of solving the problem. Okay, getting back to John's situation. Yeah, when it comes to the signal on your 2.4 gig wireless router, how good that antenna is working. What is the polarization of the antenna? Is there more than one antenna because it is a MIMO system or it's got spatial diversity? Some of the really good routers have two separate antennas because they know darn well as you move around the building, you might get a no on the performance in one antenna. And by the way, that no is created by usually multipath. Radio just doesn't suddenly decide that it's going to not go to some particular point in space. It goes everywhere. But if some of the signal is getting to the right-hand antenna out of your router by way of direct path, and some of the signal is bouncing off the refrigerator and getting there, and those two signals arrive at the right-hand antenna 180 degrees out of phase, equal in amplitude, then that antenna says, uh-huh, there's a null here. I got nothing to listen to. But the router, if it's smart enough, goes over to its other antenna, which is a little bit spatially different. The two signals don't add up the same way, and there is no null. So real good routers will have two separate antennas. And you could, if you want to, if you wanted greater range out of your router, you could put a coax cable on the back to an antenna outside the building, a pair of antennas, one on the eastern corner of your roof of your house, and one on the western corner. And so there are people who have gotten a good fraction of a mile of range in that kind of a situation. And when it comes to the laptop, let me drop. The laptop reception is another interesting environment because the cold cathode fluorescent tube, which gives you the background lighting on the display of your laptop, is really a high voltage inverter circuit making all kinds of spikes of noise. The microprocessor inside is another screamer making all kinds of spikes of noise. And I'm hearing a little bit of a feedback of my voice. So the net result is that your laptop is one hell of a spike generator, which hurts the receiver sensitivity. I know because There was a serious effort by the National Association of Broadcasters some time ago to try to put digital television reception electronics within a laptop. That would be a beautiful idea because the laptop has got this fantastic display. If you get digital television on your laptop, boy, would that be a nice thing. But you try to put a digital television receiving converter inside of the electronics of a laptop with all of those screaming spikes going on. Wow. The poor thing says, I give up. Ain't nothing there. It'll give you a weak signal indication, but really it's telling you the bit error rate is beyond the point where it can demodulate the signal. So where you put the antenna, how much local noise is nearby? Is it hidden by objects that are absorptive or reflective? There's all kinds of ways that you and I could take a standard product, like your router, give it a hell of a lot more range and reliability around your house by just adjusting the antenna parameters. I think you've already had a hint about that, and I'm trying to strengthen that hint, if you know what I mean, John. KD2FQU, mobile, K2LIW in the tech there.
Thank you, Dick. Just give me a moment. Just going over some stuff. Okay. Yes, I do get that. And there are some aftermarket software firmware updates for Stern routers. But the router I currently have doesn't have that ability to adjust the parameters that much. I remember a while back I used to have a Linksys WRT54G. Had two external antennas and had a plethora of aftermarket antennas available for it. And the DDRT firmware update for it allowed me to adjust the output, overclock the processor, and adjust a few other things. But the Belkin is just straightforward. Check for a channel that's open, and then how it operates. And supposedly claimed six antennas, internal antennas for use. Where I currently live, I have an apartment building next door. A lot of wireless router signals that are jamming up for as far as I can see, that are available within range of my wireless devices.
So if I understand you correctly, you're probably getting some interference from all those other nearby routers, and it sounds like you've got a real live environment there where even if your router doesn't work, I guess it is possible for your handheld Wi-Fi device to couple into somebody else's router, and depending on whether or not they've got an access code, you could be talking through their router. Is a guess on my part. I'm a little light on computer technology here, so give me some words on that one, John. KD2FQU, mobile, K2LIW.
Thank you, Dick. I use my cell phone and as a basic tool just for testing of what networks are within range and the channels that they operate on. And there's software available for Android or iPhone to show what's within range and the channels they operate on. The signal, though, from my own router tends to just stay low for the amounts of 60 feet away, one wall, a refrigerator, and it sits on a window sill on a bi-level apartment, a living space higher than the living room area.
So I think what you're saying, there's a couple of dropouts there, I think you're saying that the one wall, the refrigerator in the 60-foot direction probably is giving you marginal coverage to that router, if I understand correctly, and there's ways you can disturb the antenna, use a coaxial cable to get around the refrigerator, so to speak. There's ways you could adjust that if you want to. There's nothing wrong with a 20-foot long coaxial cable coming from the router with the antenna on the end of that in order to bypass absorptive, reflective, or shielding devices like your refrigerator. You could, by distributing the antennas correctly around your apartment, you could make the reliability of coverage, no matter where you stand, go to 99% if you want to. You have the technology to do that, John. KD2FQU, K2LIW.
Yes, I do understand that. I was thinking of
updating switch router that has external antennas versus the one that currently has that only has internal antennas. But I do appreciate that information. That did cross my mind to actually run a wire.
And don't let the non-existence of an external connector on the router be a showstopper. Yeah, it's nice that every one of the routers has an external connector by which you can put external antennas. However, we amateurs don't worry about opening up the package, if you know what I mean. There's not a scorpion in there with a year's supply of food. You open up the package, guaranteed there's a way that you can install your own antenna, tap into the circuit, so to speak, put a small piece of miniature coaxial cable, and establish your own external connector and or external connector, external antenna connection procedure. So the fact that it doesn't have it shouldn't be a showstopper. Once in a while, I'll even run into an extremely enthusiastic person that will modify his cell phone to give it an external antenna capability, even though the manufacturer didn't do that. So there's ways around all of this. And we as amateurs, believe it or not, one of the things we have because of our amateur license is that that license gives you the license to modify what normally would be called by the FCC standards a type accepted equipment. You're allowed to open up the package on your transmitter and receiver that you own, modify the design in any way you want, and the new design that you modified is automatically, again, type accepted, so to speak, just as long as you are a little bit careful to make sure it doesn't transmit outside of the ham radio bands or transmit a mode of operation that's by gentleman's agreement, not supposed to take place at that particular frequency region. But as long as you obey the rules, you can modify almost any chunk of electronics you own. And many of the really progressive microwave amateurs do just that. They change the living daylights out of things to make it fit their particular requirements. And so, and you think you would be scared to death. Let me drop. You think they'd be scared to death to void the warranty on the piece of electronics. Well, the more progressive amateur doesn't worry about the warranty. He knows any reasonable amount of failure of the electronics, he or one of his friends with test equipment can fix it for him. You go to Andy to B2CQL or Hal K6DPZ or Eric KE2EJ, and you say, I've got this chunk of electronics that ain't working. And they hook it up to their network analyzer, their spectrum analyzer, their service monitor. They tell you exactly what's wrong with it. They open up the package and point to the circuit that's not working correctly. You correct that, and a few minutes later, you're back on the air. So when you got a club like this one with that kind of resources, there's no such thing as a lemon electronics. My favorite thing to do is to... everything I own is used. The rig you're listening to is a Kenwood 711A 2-meter all mode. And because I like that rig so much, it's an oldie but goodie. It's got a built-in power supply, if you know what I mean. Because it goes to all modes, it's got the world's best synthesizer. If I wanted another one of those, for a short period of time, I had three of them. I loved them so much. Sold one of them to a friend of mine that begged me for it. Let me drop. If I found one of those at a flea market where it had a slightly dented front panel because it had been thrown down a flight of stairs, that wouldn't stop me from buying it. I got the service manual. I know how to fix it. As long as the main transformer is in there, it's the most expensive single part, which is a little bit hard to replace. Everything else is fixable, if you know what I mean. So you can save yourself a fortune of money by buying used equipment and repairing it. And even if you don't have the repair and don't want to spend the effort learning how to do the repair, there are friends you can get a hold of that will do it for you. Sometimes for the price of a pizza and a Coke, if you know what I mean. Thank you for any further comments on this, John. By the way, as you make these modifications to your router, you are solving a problem that a lot of people have. So please come back and tell us what you've done and how well it worked. KD2FQU, K2RIW. Yeah, there was a drop out here. On the input, I heard Hal say he's got a comment. He didn't come through the machine because the modifications are being made of the machine. Go ahead, Hal, with your comment. K6DPZ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K6DPZ. The TS711A, the fluorescent display is no longer available. Just wanted to give you that little comment. K6DPZ.
voltage fed to each one of those segments of that display, and it's fed there by some kind of a chip and a power supply and so on. There are amateurs out there that would dig in and fix the electronics that feeds that display if that display had failed. Of all the Kenwood 711As that I've ever seen, TS-711A, I've never seen any with a missing display. It seems like that display is very, very reliable from my point of view. But you've seen more pieces of equipment than I have, Hal. Have you seen failures of the TS-711 fluorescent display? K60PZ, K2LAW.
Yes, Dick, when they're cracked, it's bye-bye, and I gotta go bye-bye. Gentlemen, have a good K60PZ square.
Yeah, but because that display is so heavily buried behind the metal of the front panel, metal, is it metal? Or very tough plastic, I'd like to believe, unless somebody did something, you know, dropped a Stilson wrench on it, that that display is going to be there. And there's ways you can bypass the missing display, albeit it's starting to get difficult. So, John, please come back and tell us whatever you discover as you find better ways of making your router work in your particular New York City apartment. KD2FQU, mobile, for final, K2LAW.
Thank you very much for the information. I definitely am worried about cracking open the case on this router, but it is something to look into. I am interested in what internals it has. I wasn't able to find a schematic for the circuit board on it, but I'll continue looking. KD2FQU, the K2RIW on the second. Thank you very much for the information.
Okay. My voice has a very slight echoey sound tonight. Eric, is my voice going through a slightly different circuit at this time? K2EJ, K2RIW. You've got the volume turned up loud. Okay. Understand. He's shouting into the ring. What a way to communicate. Hey, so we're actually a little bit ahead of schedule tonight, John. Over to the mailbag. And whether or not you take the beautiful question that was given to us, question inadvertently given to us by Roy, AC2GS, on the subject of Hue, a beautiful subject. Whether we discuss that first or last is your choice. And some of these guys that send emails to John at the mailbag for discussion on the TechNet, sometimes these guys come close to stopping us, or do stop us. And when they do, they get this great big prize. We're not going to tell you what the prize is, but they get a great big prize when they ask a question, a good electronic question that's impossible to answer. KC2WGB, with the mailbag. K2LIW will be in the TechNet. You got it, John.
KC2WGB, good evening, Dick, Paul, and goodbye, Hal, and to everyone else on the net. All right, lovely night. Let me let a dropper go on to this first question. We'll take a difficult one first. Okay, got a question here from James in New Jersey, KD2GUZ. His question is, could you let him know what you know about the HARP project that was run by the Air Force? I know it's been abandoned and that system is up for sale, but maybe you could give him an idea what they were doing with it, whatever you know, and maybe some of the conspiracy cuckoo clock theories that were going around. He seems to be very interested in that. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
I'm not an expert on the subject, but there was a beautiful article in QST Magazine on HARP, H-A-A-R-P. That gave a pretty good explanation with a photograph. There was a site in Alaska and a couple other places around the world where take almost an acre of property,